Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today I talk to the Ault brothers, Greg and Phil. Phil Ault is, of course, a city councilor for Ward 3 in Guelph, but this isn't a podcast about politics. This is a podcast about brothers. Hence the inclusion of Greg Ault, Phil's brother, and the recipient of Phil's kidney. There's not much politics in this week's Guelph Politicast, but there is the heartwarming story of two brothers that prove that they will literally do anything for each other. Now, of the thousands of people waiting for an organ replacement in Canada, 77% of them are waiting for a kidney. Now, unfortunately, of the nearly 300 people who died while waiting for an organ replacement, and that's from the last year that statistics were available, which is 2014, one-third of those people were waiting for a kidney. And while usually family members offer the best match, it's not always meant to be for a variety of reasons. So you don't need to tell Greg Ault how lucky he is. He already knows. So this story begins with Greg Ault, who was suffering from the effects of diabetes, but was managing his illness well. However, time takes its toll, and then the time eventually came where Greg was forced to undergo the difficult and painful treatment of dialysis. So, it was also time to start seriously talking about a kidney transplant, and his brother Phil was more than willing to give up a kidney to save his brother's life. Now everybody knows that Councillor Ault missed last month's budget vote because he was in the hospital for the transplant, but there was actually over a year of tests and conversations and scheduling that all led up to that fateful day. So this is their story, hopefully an inspirational one, hopefully one that you might consider sharing by maybe thinking about being an organ donor yourself. So I caught up with the Ault brothers, Phil and Greg, in studio.
Hi, my name's Phil Ault.
Hi, I'm Greg Ault.
The Ault brothers.
Control, Alt, don't delete.
And I think that's fairly apt because we're here today to talk about your recent medical experience. And you both went through the experience. Greg, you needed the kidney. Phil, you offered the kidney. So let's start from the very beginning. And I hope you don't mind, Greg, getting a little bit personal. But I mean, I think that was the intention when you agreed to come on. But in terms of you're becoming ill and needing the kidney, what happened there?
Well, it was a long journey. I had diabetes. I was undiagnosed for a number of years. By the time I was diagnosed, my kidney function had been decreased to 40%. Mm-hmm. I've referred to a number of specialists. They sent me for different tests because they couldn't believe such a new diagnosis for diabetes had caused the kidney damage. But after all the tests, they did determine, yes, that indeed was what the problem was. I had an excellent team of doctors who looked after me, took really good care of me for a number of years. They thought I'd be on dialysis in 2005, but because of the treatment and the care I took of myself, following the diet, the regimen, etc., I was able to put it off until 2015. I went on dialysis, and I needed a kidney. My kidney function had started dropping radically after it hit a tipping point, mm-hmm. and it just started going down, down, down. When I first mentioned back in 2003 or whatever that I was having kidney problems, Phil did step up and said if you ever needed a transplant, he was there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so once I hit dialysis, we knew the time had come. Mm-hmm. So started getting prepped for that.
So this wasn't even a matter of, because some people like to keep their things that are going on with them medically to themselves. I take it you two have a fairly good relationship, so it wasn't even a question of how do I broach this subject with my family members. Phil volunteered.
Yeah. It was the stupidest thing I ever did. Greg didn't ask me at all, actually. I said, you know, if you need me to get tested, because I thought it was a fairly normal thing to do. Whether it had been Greg or my other brother, Steve, I certainly would have done the same thing. I have no regrets about having done it.
Mm-hmm. So this was, it's interesting that this was a decades-long journey for you that, you know, you knew there would come a point when you would have to get a transplant.
You know what? At one point, the doctors had stopped saying when, mm-hmm. and they're starting to wonder if, because he's being so well managed.
Mm.
But then a tipping point came, and my numbers just started getting worse and worse and worse, and we knew the writing was on the wall at that point.
Mm-hmm. You're in a fortunate position where you have a family member ready, willing, and able. But I was doing the research, and it's interesting that of the people who are on the transplant list, over three quarters of them are needing a kidney. And that's, I mean, that's kind of, I don't know what to say about that. That's really kind of overwhelming number in a way, because you think of all the parts in the human body that over three quarters of the people are all looking for the same part. Mm-hmm. In terms of, I'm not sure how to phrase it, but in terms of just you, were you ever concerned? Like, this was a long time coming, granted, but when you first heard that your kidneys might fail and you might one day need a transplant, where you could, I assume you started looking at the numbers. Was there a concern for you about whether or not, I mean, taking Phil out of the equation for a minute.
Well, there was a concern way back when and also recently, because if for some reason Phil wasn't a match. My other brother Steve did step up to volunteer to be
tested. Not to put Steve in a box that he was the odd man out, but yeah, okay.
Yeah. but we have rare blood type.
Right.
So if I didn't find a match in the family, it could have been a long, 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 long time before a match did come up through the donor system, if at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting, because when I was in the program, first of all, it was about a year of testing that took place, and I did have one significant caution that made it stop for a couple of months. But it was clear to me what they had said was that there are both pluses and minuses to being type B blood, and therefore being limited in whom it was that could donate the kidney. It also meant that if a type B kidney came in, there was a darn good chance that Greg could get it faster than you could imagine, because even though there's O, A, A, B, and B, if a B kidney comes in, it goes to a B candidate,
right.
And that's the only way that it can be. But from Greg's perspective, and it was bad for Greg, I admit, but I have to be very selfish at this point too. I had one, my last, absolutely the last test that came back, which was the anesthetist stating that he noticed that I had an enlarged aorta. And I didn't know what an enlarged aorta meant. I knew that it was coming off my heart, and that's about it. And he said that I would need to go to a cardiologist to get this checked out. And I rather casually said, well, okay, is that before or after the transplant? And he said, oh, no, it's before. You're not going into it before this. And at that point, my wife and I both froze, because we didn't know what the heck this meant. Mm-hmm. And from the operation being a go in 2 weeks, it went back to us having to discuss with our counselor and then with Greg and Angela and our counselor. Greg had a counselor as well. It's an extraordinary process, what this all meant. And then I had to make a decision the next day whether to go ahead with the original scheduling. And I'd say no. I said, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. I have to get a clear from my doctor. I have to talk to my wife. I have to figure out what this means. An enlarged aorta at a certain point needs to have an operation. If this is just something that I'm born with, then we're fine. It just means I have a big heart. But but if it's something that is beginning to be a significant problem, then yeah, I'm worried.
Yeah, there's several interesting parts here. But first of all, just the fact that when I was on the Ontario website, when it's talking about organ donation, it's like, well, we check your blood, and if you're matched and your blood matches, away we go. And it almost sounds like as soon as your blood matches, they put you under and yank it out. But there is a whole process, a year, and it sounds like it was a year-long process. So if you don't mind, I'd like to sort of do that step by step. So, Greg, at what point did they say, you need a transplant.
As soon as I started dialysis, I was put on the transplant list.
Which was when?
That would be...
October of last year.
So October 2015?
Yes.
Okay. So at what point do you come in, Phil?
I did all the paperwork, and the testing began, I believe, in February of last year.
So this was well before the need became apparent.
No, I'm sorry. February following his dialysis.
Okay.
It was at that point that
so
it was
we're talking
apparent.
About February 2015, and you went on dialysis in 2014.
No, actually.
Okay.
I went on dialysis.
2015, 2016. So February 2016. I'm living a year behind.
This is all the wonders of starting a new year and a new semester. So anyway, about 3 months after Greg had gone on dialysis,
right.
Then I started testing.
Right.
And the first testing that I had to go through was an emotional psychological assessment. Mm-hmm. And there were two reasons for that. The first one was to be sure that I was not being coerced into this.
Right.
Or bribed into it, potentially. Right. That does happen, even in Ontario. And the one that I feel is most important is that I don't have a god or a martyr complex.
Right.
That I'm just doing this because I think that that this is something that I should do to be a hero.
Right.
And I can tell you right now that there's no hero in this body. This was one of the scariest things that I'd ever decided in my life. So once that was passed, then I had to go through, really very grueling tests. The first were ad infinitum blood tests and urine tests, which I found very draining, no pun intended, and very demanding. It was emotionally... really drawing for me, going down to London, getting all these tests. And I mean, I'm not afraid of needles.
Right.
But after a while, I don't know how Greg does this diabetes thing. I just can't imagine. I can understand why terminal patients finally get to a point where they say, enough is enough.
Mm.
I no longer want somebody pricking me, prodding me, holding me, doing this, doing that, telling me the next procedure is that. It was intense, and I've got to say, I really respect the Ontario health system that put me through that. They put me through cardiac stress tests, the liver doctor, the hepatologist said, let me check your liver, and he did. And he said, how did that feel? I said, well, it felt a bit blah. And he said, well, guess I better take you for a liver test. So he said, you have a bit of a fatty liver. And as it turns out, virtually everybody my age has a fatty liver. Not knowing what that meant and then going online like everybody else and reading that this is the precursor to cirrhosis of the liver, I went, what the heck? So I'm flipped out on that. So what I can say that I think is a real tribute to Ontario Health and to the Canada Health System is I have seen every ologist in the world. They even put me through to an audiologist and a sinus specialist because I'm no longer allowed to take painkillers.
Mm.
And I get migraine headaches, and they wanted to see whether a sinus specialist could solve this problem. Turns out they might be able to, but it hasn't happened yet.
Mm.
And I would bet you that $100,000 minimum was spent on this procedure,
right.
Which is important. But I'll let you get back to Greg because I think it's worthwhile following the money trail on this to see what the cost recovery on transplants is as well. It's fascinating.
Well, let's get back to Greg because as Phil seeing every ologist, no disrespect to Phil, but given his age, he seems like a relatively healthy person. Meanwhile, you are not because you're getting your dialysis, you're dealing with your diabetes. So what's happening to you as Phil's being poked and prodded?
Well, I went in for the blood work. They needed to take that, regardless of whether Phil was a donor or not. They needed to get my profile
mm-hmm.
for other matches. Met with social workers, etc., discussed my lifestyle, made sure I wasn't engaged in any risky behaviors like intravenous drugs, etc. Because they don't want to give a kidney to somebody who's I'm going to risk infection,
right?
Because you're immune compromised after you receive the transplant. So they investigated that, confirmed that I would be a good candidate and I'd be stick to my med regime, etc., be conscientious about it, emphasize how they need to be taken on time. I can't delay them, and how serious the drugs are. They're powerful drugs.
Right.
They want to make sure I had a full understanding. And that was before. They reiterated this after the transplant. There was education in the transplant unit, had videos to watch, a lot of material to go over just to reiterate how powerful these are, go over the symptoms, if I get an infection, etc., what I'm supposed to do, possible side effects, etc., etc., etc. But it wasn't quite... They also did all the same sort of workups. They wanted to make sure my heart was okay, that I wasn't going to have a heart attack on the table, that there wasn't anything lurking, that I didn't have cancer. Because of the diabetes, there was a bit of blood in the urine. They wanted to check that out, make sure it wasn't a problem with the bladder, etc.
Right.
So I had a thorough workup as well. I know I'm clean from top to bottom, excepting for the diabetes, which I still have.
But, I mean, if they spent $100,000, Phil's estimation, on making sure he was good to go, I mean, we're talking way more than that.
I imagine by the time they were done, it was about $250,000.
Yeah.
Operation procedure.
Right.
Yeah.
It sort of blows your mind when you're talking about these numbers and the fact that we live in a country, because, you know, we're seeing people deal with this south of the border. Mm-hmm. We live in a country where we never see the receipts. We're just ballparking mm-hmm. these things. But it must be pretty mind-blowing.
Well, I know the dialysis alone is $70,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's home dialysis. It's the most efficient for the healthcare system, and it's best for the person who's on dialysis as well, but it's a $70,000 a year item.
Mm-hmm.
And that's before all the doctor's appointments, everything else that goes with it, the checkups, yeah. the lab work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. So at what point, you're mentioning, Phil, that was a couple of months before, that there was the concern about your big heart. But I think a lot of people are aware that this all sort of came down roughly the same time the budget vote, that you missed the voting for this year's budget because mm-hmm. You're yeah. in the hospital. So when did you get the green light? When was this good to go?
The green light initially was given in September, and then it came crashing down a couple weeks later. I had to go see the cardiologist. There was that approval. And I think it was at that point that actually the green light was given, but the real issue then became scheduling of the operating room.
Right.
And that's really a neat process, actually. Mm-hmm. They were very clear that I had to give up the operating rooms if I couldn't decide that day. And I felt a lot of pressure. I admit that. And they know that. And they said at the same time, you're going to feel pressure. And if you feel pressure, then say no.
Right.
Then they gave the date. And they said, we like to do it when we can have the same team in the room, same room at the same time. And they actually said, when Greg is actually in the OR so that they can just flip it from one guy to the other.
Right.
That was ideal.
So nobody's putting it in a lunch
yeah.
box or
whatever. Well, yeah, they kicked it around a bit. These guys like playing hockey. We couldn't do that. The best that we could get was one surgery after the other. And we got the approval, and it was December the 7th. And I went, well, that's convenient. That'll get me out of a meeting. And that is indeed the truth. It's actually got me out of more than one. I expect to be back on January the 30th. The truth is, Adam, I believed I was Superman. I thought, I'll be back 3 days later. And if there's a meeting in December and I need to be there, come hell or high water, I'm going to be there. Crap, that's not happening.
I'm
exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely exhausted.
I remember you sent me a message that said, oh, I'll be back but for I think it was the 19th. There's a meeting on the 19th. I'll be back.
Yeah, sure. Roll me another one. So anyway, we got the approval and And I actually thought it was a good time because I thought it's over Christmas. Mm-hmm. It's a good recovery time. But what I've discovered is that I have a tremendous amount of sympathy and support for people that suffer seasonal affective disorder and for seniors who are shut-ins or any shut-ins. Mm. I'm recovering all right. But in a cold time of year when I'm used to being physically active and I enjoy winter and I enjoy shoveling and I enjoy skiing, I am feeling very claustrophobic. Mm. I believe the best time for these operations to be done is in good weather, when you can get outside and you can at least enjoy the good weather.
You can at least sit on a porch or something.
You can sit on a porch. Yeah. I think I've memorized every spider's web and dust bunny in the house now, and they're all my friends. December the 7th was it. It was unfortunate, but I think the city got a fairly good budget out of the process, and kudos to my colleagues for finding consensus on that.
Maybe you're the one who sort of drives everyone apart.
That'd be it. Yeah, I am it. I am the fulcrum at the end of the wishbone that people are pulling.
Phil is the fulcrum. Remember that. Greg, this must be a bit... I mean, you do have your recovery, but the flip side to Phil is, you know, he's a little bit less healthy, having mm-hmm. given up a kidney. You are getting more healthy than you had been because you have the kidney. So that must be... This must be an interesting comparison.
It is. Yeah, I didn't anticipate that. In one way, I seem to be doing better than Phil, but that is probably because I was so bad before. It's a comparative thing. And when we found out about the aorta, that really kind of freaked me out because I didn't want anything to happen to Phil
of
because
course,
of his
yeah.
Gift to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how are you feeling now in terms of, I mean, Phil's gone into great detail about how he's feeling. In terms of your own regimen and how you're getting healthier and springing back, what does that look like for you?
Oh, it feels really good. It's a miracle. It's life-changing.
Mm-hmm. Tell them about the little things, the coffee and the toothbrushing and the guitar. Those are the things that just blow my mind.
Yeah, no, seriously. I couldn't drink coffee before. I'd get sick.
Mm-hmm.
It's been going on for years. If I brushed my teeth, I would always gag and throw up.
Mm.
If I drank tea any time after 12 noon, I'd be up all night.
Mm.
That one, in retrospect, I can understand because I wasn't processing the caffeine. But
right.
all these others, they've disappeared. I can drink coffee. I love coffee. I enjoy coffee. I had severe trigger finger in my fingers. I couldn't really make a fist.
Right.
But I was over at Phil's one day. Picked up a guitar and realized, whoa, I can play a guitar again.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must be a... Were you a guitarist before? I know Phil's a musician.
He's actually quite an accomplished musician.
So, yeah, so that must have... That must be a revelation.
It was. I just can't... I did not anticipate that. Didn't see any of these other things coming. And you know what? I'm not complaining. I'm happy about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It must be like, and I'm not sure what it must be like, but it must be like coming alive again.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I have more energy now. I'm able to help out around the house,
mm-hmm.
Which I really appreciate, being able to help my wife out. She's been carrying the load
right.
in a big way. And my daughter, Abby, I have to give her kudos as well. They've been carrying the load. There's stuff I can't do now, right, because of restrictions from the surgery. I can't lift.
Right.
So I can't take the garbage out. But... things like making dinner, doing sweeping the kitchen, vacuuming the floor. If the vacuum's on that floor, I can do all that, and I'm glad I can. I can help out that way.
So what's the immediate future looking like for you guys? What is it? I mean, you will never be 100%, Phil, because you've given up.
Actually,
the kidney.
I will be 100%.
Well,
this is the fascinating thing about this whole thing, is my kidney, and as it turns out Greg's as well, will grow to about 75% in terms of the actual size of the two kidneys, and to 75% efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
The one concern that I do have, and Greg might even answer this right now, I don't know whether they took out one of my adrenal glands or not, because Greg had talked about the possibility that if he got one of my adrenal glands, it could cure his diabetes. But it was the wrong type of diabetes for that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether he got it anyway or not. Did you get it?
No, I still got diabetes. My number.
No, I don't care about your diabetes. I care about my adrenal gland. Did you get it?
If I did get it, it didn't work.
Okay. So I do need to find that out, because I think that does affect metabolism. But I curled on the weekend. That was my first physical activity, and it was paradise just to be able to do something. What Greg talks about physical lifting and all that is really true. We can't do that, and I felt it on the weekend, and I felt stiff the way that I normally would from physical activity, but what a relief. just to feel that and to feel physically active again. I'm looking forward to the spring when I can get out and bike and play baseball and everything I used to do.
And aside, Phil, were you able to sweep when you curled?
Yep, sure was.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah, you hear that. He wants to sweep. He wants to vacuum, too.
Well, that's probably good news for the wives. I think one of the interesting things that have come out from this is, Phil, you've been fairly vocal about people having to sign.
Absolutely.
Their donor cards.
I make no hesitation about that.
Yeah.
I think that we've got it backwards. I think that that it should be mandatory unless you sign that you do not want to donate. And I'm very sympathetic to people that feel that there are religious or family reasons for not donating organs. It makes complete sense to me that people who have those feelings would not want to. But I think it needs to be a negative optioning. Honestly, living donation is not for everyone. Mm-hmm. I would say that I was probably on the cusp of not doing it as well. Nothing against Greg here, but it's just one of those things that it's a life-changing decision.
Right.
It's a tough decision. If you go into it believing that you're a hero or that this will make you godlike, no, it's going to make you feel awful for a while.
Or even it's going to make amends, perhaps. You feel you haven't lived life to the fullest, so this one gesture will amend you somehow.
Yeah. Truth is, I've had a great life. And, I'm at age 60, and at that age, let's continue to have a great life.
Has this made you a bit more active in terms of these issues, Greg? You know, I think there's no substitute for actually seeing the hospital system from the inside out.
You know,
as much as any of us might want to look at those issues, it's concerning hospital funding and medical options. Yeah. I think you only really have a full understanding of it once you've been on the inside of the hospital for a long period of time.
I truly appreciate our healthcare system. If you are really sick and need it, services are available.
Mm-hmm.
I've got into things really, really quick because I was in a really serious situation. If there was something wasn't life-threatening, it's more of a optional surgery, they'd make me wait as well.
Sure.
But for things that are critical, they make the space, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you my analysis on that one, because I'm a healthy person. I'm very physically fit. Going into London Health Sciences and observing everybody around me, I said to my wife, I said, the doctors here never see anybody who's healthy. Unless you're coming in to be a donor, a kidney donor, or perhaps a liver donor, everybody here is in, and I mean literally, is in terrible, terrible shape, and they're desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And our healthcare system is intended to make life better for people, and our priority needs to be those that are in a life-threatening situation. Or also like Greg, whose life can be improved to the point where he can go back to work in 2 months and he can start putting money back into the system.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome as far as I'm concerned.
I can be more productive than I've ever been now because I have more energy, better health, clearer thinking.
Mm-hmm.
In so many ways. Anyway, the reason I am here is so that I can promote the notion, sign the card, go to www.beadonor.ca. It's life-changing, and it's going to improve people's lives. And if you want to be greedy, do it because it's going to save the tax dollars down the line.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge cost benefit to people receiving transplants rather than staying on the healthcare system, taking up a lot of resource, a lot of money, a lot of time, and spaces for other people.
Right. And if you want to be ethical, remember that in China, there's allegations of organ harvesting from members of Falun Gong and other political dissidents. You want to stop what is, in essence, one of the most inhumane practices in the world? Just sign your donor card.
Be greedy, be a donor. That's a good place to leave it on. So, Phil, Greg, I think I speak for everyone who's just is glad that this worked out so well for the both of you, and you're both getting happier and healthier, and good luck going forward. And, Phil, we'll see you at council in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. Thanks, Adam.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
And once again, that was Greg Ault and his brother, Ward 3 counselor Phil Ault. To learn more about organ donation, you can go to giftoflife.on.ca. And you can register yourself to be an organ donor by learning more at badonor.ca. And keep in mind, the next time you renew either your license or your health card, you can authorize your new card to reflect that you have made the decision to be an organ donor. And of course, make sure you let your family know your wishes. You never know, you might even be able to save a life. And that's all for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can donate to the Guelph Politico Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. For all the latest political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.